Hello and welcome to this bonus edition of the EMG Health Podcast, sponsored by an educational grant from Thermo Fisher, in which the views and discussion might not represent the position or endorsement of either. I'm your host, Dr. Jonathan Sakia. For this episode, we'll be talking about infectious diseases, more specifically discussing the PROGRESS study, which explores the long-term impact of antibiotic overuse in sepsis. We'll also be touching on the effect of antibiotic stewardship and short antibiotic duration in relation to the mortality of septic patients. Here to help me dive into this subject is a specialist in the subject of infectious diseases all the way from Greece. I'm joined by Evangelos Giamarellos Bouboulis, a professor of internal medicine and director of the master's program in infectious diseases at Attikon University Hospital in Athens, and the National, and I hope I pronounce this properly, Kapodistrian University of Athens Medical School. The good professor's research includes the pathogenesis of sepsis with an emphasis on immunoparalysis, innate immunity, and in vitro activities. In addition to this, he has a curiosity of the pharmacokinetics of antimicrobials and their interactions on multi-drug resistant species. Professor Giamarellos Bouboulis is also a guest professor at the Center for Sepsis Control and Care at the Jena University Hospital in Germany, and he's president of the European Shock Society and chairman of the European Sepsis Alliance. As you will have gathered by now, he's an extremely accomplished gentleman with 400 peer-reviewed articles, more than 17,000 citations under his belt, and I'm told he's a very deft hand at cooking seafood. Professor Giamarellos, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you very much for this elegant introduction. I sincerely hope that at the end of this podcast, your audience will feel glad that I managed to meet at least part of what you are promising them to listen from me.
Well, thank you for that. I also have to say, Evangelos, that this topic is extremely interesting to me. I'm privileged to serve as a member of a group called the Global Chief Medical and Health Officers Network, and we take on annual initiatives. And the one that we've been battling against recently is antibiotic resistance. And unless we manage antimicrobials, we're going to have a major problem on our hands. We've actually discussed the misuse and overuse of antibiotics a lot on this podcast because of my personal interest. So could you begin by outlining for us the long-term impact of antibiotic overuse, specifically insofar as it relates to septic patients?
Well, probably that's the most difficult question to address. And, you know, I remember when I was a young student that resistance, bacteria to antibiotics, was something that has emerged in countries in the Mediterranean region. However, the Western world did not wish at that time, 30 years ago, to listen about resistance of antibiotics. Everyone was confident that that was a limited phenomenon in some countries. However, there were two major issues that led to the spread of resistance. The first is the migration of populations and the globalization, and the second is the lack of development of new antibiotics. And because of this, people are obliged to use the same antibiotic again and again. And as people are growing on, and why are we growing? Because due to technology, new medications for chronic health disorders, we are surviving more. And since we are surviving more, we are experiencing more infections. So we are exposed to more and more antibiotics.
These antibiotic prescriptions would primarily happen outside of the hospital, right?
Talking about people in the community, speaking about people who are getting treatment from GPs. So there is a type of network, a circuit outside the hospital in the community where overconsumption of antibiotics may lead to expansion of resistance. And what is the link mediating that? And the answer, which is an answer that we know already 10 years now, is that inside our body, we have one more organ, one more system, I like to call it, which is something that when I was young, everybody was neglecting, which is this organ, our normal flora, particularly the flora of the gut, which is what we call today our microbiota or our microbiome. And through the overconsumption of antibiotics in the community, the microbiota becomes adapted to that. So that means when patients who arrive at hospital septic, they're already colonized by a small amount of resistant bacteria. We don't know that. But once they arrive at the hospital environment, these resistance bugs, they start to replicate, and all of a sudden, the flora is turned to a resistant. And if we manage to prevent that, then we will manage to improve the outcome of our patients.
Just as a thought, as physicians, we ought to do our bit to educate people about the risk of antibiotic overuse and how this will impact our microbiome and what the consequences are, correct?
That's correct. Major problem is that we don't have a wide so far knowledge about our microbiota. I speak about scientific knowledge. The majority of physicians, they know few things or their knowledge is really limited. But it is obvious that it's high time that we broaden our horizons, and we see and we understand that the microbiome and our microbiota is an organ which is extremely adaptive to the environment. And the main environment is the threat the microbiota is feeling when it is attacked. When it is attacked, when the human host is administered antibiotics, either orally or systemically.
So let's talk a little bit about your study named Procalcitonin-Guided Antimicrobial Therapy to Reduce Long-Term Sequelae of Infection, or in short, the PROGRESS trial. What were the motivations behind launching this research and the overall objectives of the PROGRESS study? By the way, it's a great name. I love how people name studies. This is a great one.
Thank you for this. It is true that starting already 14 years now, there are a lot of randomized clinical trials in which patients are getting treatment for respiratory tract infections with the standard of care. That means that the duration of antibiotics is dependent to the discretion of the attending physician, or they apply an early stopping rule based on procalcitonin. What does this mean? That means that when the patient arrives and it is about to start antibiotics, you get him one blood sample where you measure procalcitonin. Then you repeat this blood sampling after 5 to 7 days, and you compare the baseline function to what is happening after 5 to 7 days. The change from baseline, which actually is translated to what the host is telling us about his condition, means that you can safely stop or not antibiotics without putting life. So that was done several times. A lot of studies with the same design, lung infection, community lung infection, and the outcome was to see if through this approach you can shorten the duration of antibiotics. 2016 were an impressive study was published coming from the Netherlands. In the study, it was shown that actually, the acronym of that study was SARS. The study showed for the first time that if you stop antibiotics earlier, you achieve a decrease of mortality. However, there was no mechanism behind that. So we wanted to design a study to provide this mechanism. What we had in our minds is that, first of all, having a deja vu of previous studies, that means to implement the procalcitonin algorithm to demonstrate that we decrease the duration of antibiotic exposure was of no meaning because others have done that. So we wanted a patient population who were more sick. So we enrolled only patients with sepsis. We wanted to enroll patients not just with lung infections, but other types of sepsis so as to have a universal finding well beyond the lung infections, and also to have a different outcome. The outcome is it possible that the patients in the substance trial, they died because when they died, when they were not under the guidance of procalcitonin? Is it possible that procalcitonin protected because long-term they developed infections by multidrug resistant organisms? So that was our primary object, to demonstrate that if you stop early antibiotic treatment, using procalcitonin guided, what you can do is to protect your patient to develop less infections by motor drug-resistant organisms, which is a new threat to our society. And if I may add here, and I hope that my answer did not take too long, someone could say why the results of the PROCRE study are so important nowadays. And there is a clear-cut answer. Nowadays, we are facing a pandemic, and all patients who are admitted and hospitalized for COVID-19 pneumonia, all of them, no exception, are administered antibiotics, irrespective if they're culture positive or culture negative. So procalcitonin can be a perfect tool to shorten the exposure of these patients to antibiotics.
Can we actually, your answers are just wonderfully complete, and thank you for explaining it so carefully. Can we dig in a little bit to the methodology and approach and share with us the reasons why you considered a procalcitonin PCT-based approach for the study, and paint a picture of what the setup was like and how the PROGRESS study differs from previous studies? It's a bunch of questions all in one there, but can you expand on that?
Well, thank you very much for that. So actually the backbone of the design was pretty much similar to previous studies. That meant that we had a standard of care group, and the group where physicians were following the stopping rule of procalcitonin. What means follow the stopping rule of procalcitonin? That means that after 5 days of treatment, I repeat a PCT measurement and I compare that to the baseline. And if there is a drop by 80% or more, or if PCT is less than 0.5, I stop antibiotic treatment. If the rule is not met on day 5, I repeat measurement on day 6 and on measurement 7. And when the rule is met, then I stop antibiotics. The standard of care means that the duration of antibiotics is something which is decided by the attending physician. So that it's pretty much common to other studies. What are the differences? The first difference is that we did stool collection, a baseline, day 7, day 28, and we explored the stool for the presence of water drug-resistant organisms and of cholinesterotioides deficiency. And also, after day 28, we followed up intensively our patients until day 180, that means 6 months. And the idea was not just to capture new events, but to see whether there are risk hospitalizations and their overall state of health. All this together introduces a novelty. But the real novelty was not just this design. The real novelty was that we used complex primary endpoint. What does this mean? That means that there were 3 elements in the primary endpoint, and if a patient was meeting any of 3 of them, he was considered to meet the primary endpoint. What were these elements? To develop a new infection by Clostridium difficile the first 6 months, or to develop a new infection by water drug-resistant bacteria the first 6 months, or to die by baseline infection by Clostridium or water drug-resistant.
Can you tell us the impact of this procalcitonin-guided approach on patients' outcome compared to the standard of care? If you can just expand on that a bit.
So, as you know, all the studies, they have one primary endpoint, which is the primary endpoint for our study, the composite primary endpoint that I mentioned to you already. And of course, there are plenty of secondary. So I would like first to address the primary, and then we look step by step the secondary. So as we said, the primary endpoint was a primary endpoint which was synonymous to a bad outcome for the patients. So the patient, to meet the primary endpoint, should have at least one of 3 incidental findings. The first, a new infection by Clostridioides. The second, a new infection by water drug-resistant organism. The third, death by baseline infection by water drug-resistant bacteria or Clostridioides. So, among patients who were receiving standard of care, duration of antibiotics, this primary endpoint was met in 15.3% in patients treated with shorter duration based on the PCD slowing rule. That was met in 7.2%. In other terms, there was a reduction of the incidence of this bad outcome by 57%. That's enormous. That's huge. There is no other intervention ever reported so far in patients with sepsis. Because all these patients, they had sepsis, and most importantly, they had sepsis by the new sepsis 3 definition. So based also on this, this study is the most updated study on PCD ever so far. And of course, we said, always there is a primary, but you know, there are some key secondary endpoints. And among them, I would like to stress, in my opinion, two very important. The first is mortality. In other terms, did we manage to replicate what the Dutch SUPS trial managed to show? In other terms, following the PCD stopping rule leads to less deaths. Allow me to answer to this. The mortality after 28 days of patients with sepsis receiving standard of care was 28.2%. Nothing new so far. This is anticipated. And why it is anticipated? Because they have sepsis. The question comes, what is the mortality in patients receiving shorter duration of antibiotics following the PCT stopping rule? And this is 15.2%. It is decreased by 54%.
How many physicians, acting physicians, physicians being bedside every day, would dare to stop early antibiotics using a biomarker for a patient who has sepsis?
I can tell you from my daily life, almost nil. However, the study showed that by giving correct duration of treatment guided by calcitonin, then mortality is decreased. And the question comes, okay, it is an observation. It could easily work differently in a different setting. So in order to be certain that there is a direct link between the intervention here is shorter duration of antibiotics by using procalcitonin to guide us when to stop antibiotics. We need to search for the mechanism. So we provide in our manuscript two mechanisms. The first one, we investigated what is the association between colonization of the gut flora by multidrug resistant organisms and the primary endpoint. And indeed, we found that patients receiving less treatment with antibiotics in terms of days of treatment by using procalcitonin, they had less risk of developing the primary endpoint after adjustment by the rate of the colonization of the gut by multidrug resistant organisms. In other terms, we proved that by using procalcitonin, the microbiota is less suffering, and if it is less suffering, then the risk to develop the bad outcome is less. This is not happening only for day 7, it also happened for day 28. However, there is also a second link, and the link is several times when we administer antibiotics to our patients, we have the impression that antibiotics are harmless compared to the severity of the patient. So, by giving to our patients a shorter course of antibiotics by using procalcitonin, we had less antibiotic-associated diarrhea, less antibiotic-associated acute kidney injuries, less electrolyte derangements, less arrhythmia, and less derangements of the liver biochemical function. So, if all these are brought together, that means all of a sudden a great protection for the host. And this protection is translated to lower mortality.
So, we know that bringing any, effecting any change in medicine takes time because physicians are naturally inertia bound and tend to be resistant to change. They need convincing. So give me one sentence based on everything that you told us. What's the main message to your colleagues about the use of procalcitonin as a part of antibiotic stewardship? One sentence, if you were like doing, let's pretend that you're doing a marketing campaign for a new motor car. Why should they buy this message?
So by using PCT, in patients with lung infection and in patients with urinary tract infections, you achieve less deaths the first month, less severe adverse events by antibiotics, less long-term infections by resistant organisms, and also money savings.
Well, that's a pretty good marketing campaign. I would sign up for that. And in fact, as a surgeon who had to look after patients with pseudomembranous colitis, always after 5 p.m. on a Friday or in the middle of the night, I'm signing on. You've hinted at the short-term impact of antibiotics in the body. What about longer-term, particularly on the gut microbiome? What do we know about the long-term impacts?
So, actually, what we know already, and that's very important, is that if you are colonized by a resistant bug, in order to get rid of this bacterium, you need not to jump into any consumption of antibiotics for 9 months. That's impressive. 9 months, a resistant bacterium resides inside your body.
9 months. Okay. Well, you know, we're only just learning about the microbiome, so I guess watch this space. We'll have to have you come back in a couple of years and tell us more. What about the burden of infections caused by Clostridioides and multiple drug-resistant organisms? I've already hinted at pseudomembranous colitis as a surgeon, but what about the other burdens of infections?
Allow me to provide this burden in an indirect way. Every day, we are reading in the internet of patients dying because of COVID-19. However, this is just a short sentence. If you take a closer look, it will tell you that all these deaths have happened in the ICU, where the patients were hospitalized for more than 15 or 20 days from the start of COVID. And what did the patients die from? They died from hospital sepsis, which was caused by multidrug resistant organisms. Did I give you any direct answer? And now the direct answer, the number one killer in this world.
Yeah, let's dwell on that for a second. Biomarkers like procalcitonin, what about reducing the long-term adverse events that patients might experience? And how do you think the findings from your studies will potentially influence clinical practice, notwithstanding the fact that physicians tend to be resistant to change?
Well, at a certain time point, because actually, sooner or later, our world will get out of the pandemic. And once we get out of the pandemic, we will realize that we will jump into a different type of crisis, which is the financial crisis. And in this financial crisis, there will be cost restrictions. And these cost restrictions will implement in health. So in order, based on the findings of our study, to gain money, in order to reduce cost restrictions, unnecessary cost restrictions, unnecessary hospitalization, you need to implement the PCT stopping rule for antibiotic stewardship, because this will long-term reflect on new hospitalizations by patients being colonizers of multidrug-resistant organisms.
Yeah, I've often heard it said that if you do the right things for patients, you'll achieve better clinical outcomes and you'll save money. Whether that's tight glycemic control for diabetics, whether that's appropriate use of anesthetics during surgical procedures so people wake up sooner, you reduce long-term morbidity, long-term mortality, short-term, medium-term, everything. So it's a consistent message that we've learned in other areas of medicine. And I think you've been very clear that procalcitonin, we should be deploying it now based on the evidence, yes?
That's correct.
We shouldn't be waiting.
No, not at all. That would be a huge mistake. And actually, even now, where we are at the peak of the pandemic, we need to implement that now, because we need all, you know very well that most of survivors of COVID-19 leaving the hospitals, they are at the bad physical shape. And they are prone to second and third hospitalization by multidrug-resistant organisms. Yep. So we need to prevent them to be colonized. How to do that? By using the PCT stopping rule.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a very dear friend and colleague who has had a heck of a bad ride, and he suffered from the thrombotic effects, and he's almost unrecognizable. He lost so much weight and was so debilitated by this wretched disease. You know, again, as physicians, we are trained to be skeptical and questioning and debate. But I'm of the firm belief that if the data suggests that A is better than B, we should switch to A until such time as we're told, no, you should do C. And the history of medicine is replete with such examples. So I congratulate you on your work and your commitment to it. What would you say, I mean, you've told us a lot already. Is there anything else you'd tell us that you've learned from the study that you would offer to your patients when you're talking to them?
There is one key secret in antibiotic stewardship. We think that antibiotic stewardship is just to restrain the use of antibiotics. This is not correct. You need to shorten the duration of antibiotics, but only when the patient can afford that. In other terms, you need a biomarker that gives you information about how the patient reacts to his infection and to the antibiotics to kill the infection. The only biomarker that we have available that can early demonstrate that is PCT. And the link of the use of PCT to the reduction of mortality, because this is what we physicians are for, reduce mortality, is the best we can offer to our patients.
Evangelos, I like to ask every guest a version of this question. You're such a good communicator, and you have such a clear way of thinking. If you woke up tomorrow morning and discovered that you're chief medical officer of the world, what three things would you do to improve human health? I think I know what one of them is.
So allow me to escalate or down-escalate them in the way you believe more appropriate. The first is that I want people to vaccinate, to be vaccinated, just for COVID-19, with vaccines in general. The second, which is something that, in my opinion, in the pandemia era is not taking place. I would give more time and more decision-making ability to trustful scientists, and I would limit the impact of scientists acting in a political way. And third, I believe that antibiotic stewardship is mandatory, and it needs to be done in a safe way for the patient. With antibiotic stewardship means that you use antibiotics, and we know antibiotics for many years now, for decades now, they are safe drugs. They save lives, but they can save more lives if they are used in the appropriate way. And part of the appropriateness is to stop them early or stop it at the appropriate time for every different patient. And this is where and how PCT is working.
Well, if you run for chief medical officer of the world, if it were an elected position, I would run your campaign for you and I would vote for you, because antimicrobial resistance and the overuse and misuse of antibiotics is one of the greatest public health threats. And I believe it's forecasted to be a bigger killer than cancer by the year 2050. It is absolutely vital that we continue to sound the alarm and educate physicians, patients, the media, everyone, advising them to be cautious in their use. Professor Giamarellos, Evangelos, I want to thank you for all the work you do for patients and also for taking the time to come onto the podcast today to share your findings so clearly and so powerfully. Thank you.
I do thank you very much. It was a real joy talking to you, and I'm looking forward to a repeat of this very nice discussion.
Absolutely. And as I said, over some nice grilled fish and a bottle of wine in Athens.
This will be done.
Absolutely. Well, that's it for today's episode, folks. And I hope you found today's discussion of interest, because I certainly did. Please listen in to all episodes of the EMG Health Podcast. They're available to download, and you can get the podcast at EMG Health or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Meanwhile, be safe, stay well, and remain curious. Bye for now.